not coming out.
It's what? Why?
It has to be positioned just right.
Positioned just right. Make it a drop louder.
Yeah, it's not. Can you try that?
Hello? Hello? Yeah, make it a drop louder. Drop, because I can. Yeah. Good. Everything's running, ready to go. All right, today is, it's October 8th, 2018. Just think where we are. 100 years after Chaim Vriska died, 101 years since Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was born. Time is marching on. I want to coin a new word today. I was thinking about this yesterday when I said hello to all my students in front of me and all those listening. So all over the Chag, wherever I was, people came up for air, I would say, and ran over, told me they're my students. I'm virtual student. So I think I'm going to use the word, they're students and they're sub-students. Sub-students means not the same like a student in front of you. But it's not just a sub-student, he's a submarine. They're underwater, and then every once in a while, wherever I am, they emerge and run over and introduce themselves and tell me all the jokes I told for the last 10 years. So I say good morning to my students and my sub-students. If you recall, Simon, it was fixed, it's set now? Okay, because already, Baruch Hashem. If you recall, the final shiur we spoke about Reb Blazer Silva, or the shiur next to the last, we spoke about Reb Blazer and being present the Agudat HaRabbanim and the Dinei Torah. And one of the Dinei Torah, one of the areas we were on, I mentioned the whole story of how Nei Yisrael came to be. So a Talmud from Nei Yisrael, Chaim Lazarus, wrote to me a very interesting point. I mentioned that Nei Yisrael originally was in like a Litvish yeshiva in family hands, but ultimately it reached a point where there was no one within the immediate family to become Rosh Yeshiva, and today the Rosh Yeshiva is Rabbi Feldman. So Rabbi, I imagine it's Rabbi Lazarus, makes the point that that I'm correct. Rabbi Kolupsky, the old Mashgiach, became the Rosh Yeshiva for a very small period. He didn't live that long. And then Rabbi Feldman came, and there is a nebulous family connection. Rabbi Elon Feldman of Atlanta, Rabbi Emanuel's son, that's Simon's rabbi back home, Rabbi Aaron's nephew, is married to a daughter of Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg. In other words, Rabbi Elon Feldman is the son of Rabbi Emanuel, and therefore he's a nephew to Rabbi Aaron Feldman, and he's married to a daughter of Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, Miriam Weinberg Feldman. So there is a bit of a connection. However, I don't believe that's why they turned to Rabbi Feldman. They turned to Rabbi Feldman because he's a tremendous lamdan and they needed someone familiar with Nei Yisrael. I also mentioned Kliach Yad, that the Rosh Yeshiva of Nei Yisrael today, who lived in Israel for so many years, lived in a brak, very, very anti-Zionist. Mm-hmm. So here Chaim Lazarus tells me, in terms of Rabbi Feldman's political positions, I think you understand them quite well. When he arrived in Baltimore, he did an interview with the Baltimore Sun espousing some pretty strong anti-Zionist views. And the article is here, it's not important to read, but one story here that breaks my heart. Additionally, he came to my old shul in Baltimore, Shomri Yemunah, that's Rabbi Heshwein Reb's old shul. My good friend Eli Schlesberg Dobbins there. I even think my granddaughter-in-law and her family, the Sykes family, Dobbins or Dobbin there. And he came to the shul for a great nephew's bar mitzvah in the early 2000s. The whole shul watched aghast as he stood for the tefillah for the United States and sat vigorously for the Mishaberach for the Medina. I was there. I saw it. If anyone tries to deny it, they are spreading fake news. So, all right, that's an addendum to what we spoke about. Baruch Hashem, halavai, everything should fall into place. And as I mentioned, I spoke Shabbos morning at the hotel, at the Sudah. I was one of the guests, a family deal, my wife's family. And I said to them, if anyone criticizes Israel, smack their face. Israel's a democracy. Something's wrong here, come live here and vote. We are Israel. If you criticize, who are you criticizing? And remember, it has changed remarkably since I came in Aliyah 50 years ago. I need not tell you what would have been here had the Belzer Rebbe told his Chassidim, go in Aliyah. Had the Satmar Ruv told his Chassidim, go in Aliyah. Had the Gerer Rebbe, they did encourage, they were not anti, but it wasn't encouraged enough. Okay, but let's now come down to Inyan Diyoma. So here's Reb Lazer Silver, this is the height of his life. Murray, you may be very well known all over the world. Here it is. Murray's Kosher Socks, 25% off entire store. And I can tell Murray, if he can get one Jew to make a sock out of wool and linen, and it goes public that there's socks with wool and linen, he's a millionaire. You follow? Do you remember in New York when they spread the rumor that the eggs on Pesach are washed in chametz stick vinegar? And only from, there was one thing in Brooklyn where they stamped it, kosher Pesach vinegar or something, and boy, did they clean up that Pesach. Anyway, back here. So this is Reb Lazer now at the height. And 1937, Begeit Zal Mavet, the last Knesia Gedola of Akudat Yisrael in the old country. And Reb Lazer gets an invitation. And Reb Lazer, come, Simon, move over, sit where you can see me, and that young man next to you, let him come where you can see me. We don't have that many students that we have to block people's vision. Okay, wait, sit down, let me see. Okay, move over more, don't block Morty. Okay, you're right in the middle, good. So Reb Lazer goes to Europe and he goes to visit his Rebbe, Reb Chaim Meiser. And I told you last time how he learned with him in the kibbutz. Told you about Reb Chaim Meiser. And Reb Chaim Meiser says to him, it's time to organize an active, underline the word active. Because someone from Agudat Yisrael will say, what is Rakefet talking about? Agudah was organized already in 1922 in America. That's correct. Agudah was organized in 1922. It was an address, not more. There was no interest. The whole world was Zionist. It was Mizrahi. Who was interested in Agudah? But now it's a different world. You see, to be the right person in the right at the right time, the right place, the right time. This now is a different time. 1922, what you had in America, a handful of Orthodox Jews desperately trying to survive the inroads of assimilation and challenge, reform, conservative. 1937, you're starting to get Jews running away from Hitler, Jews who are from... It's not like my grandmother. On my father's side, they tell me I didn't know her. There's a picture of me in the office with her. I was 2 years old when she died. It's a picture of I'm in the baby carriage and she's I'm sitting up in my baby carriage and she's talking to me. And this grandmother, this grandmother. Was a tzaddikit. If you know Dr. Josh Daniel, if the name means anything to you, the famous dentist. So he had a great grandmother who was the tzaddikit of the family, and she would only eat in my grandmother's home. My grandmother was a niece to Josh Daniel's great grandmother, tzaddikit, and she had three children in America. These three children, I don't want to go into more details, just suffice it to say, that my father was the only one that had Jewish connection, and my father had no education whatsoever. He davened when I brought him to Yiddishkeit. He davened in English. He couldn't. He could read Hebrew, but very haltingly. It didn't mean anything to him. He davened in English. We'll talk about it next Sunday in class. Halacha l'maisa. So my father told me that they would ask my grandmother, how do you raise children in America? And you know, her attitude was, my father quoted her, that the Eibish, the Daigit for the Goyim, ve the Daigin for mein Kindeicher, that the Ribbono Shel Olam worries about the Goyim, so I'll take care of my children too. But you know, what type of answer was that? But that was that whole generation. The Rav used to say, I quote the Rav now, it was a generation that had no vision for tomorrow. They gave up the battle. They still were from some of them. Those grandparents of mine were Shomer Shabbos. My grandfather, who lived with us afterwards for 20 years, was Shomer Shabbos 100%, but there was no vision of tomorrow, no vision of what to do. By 1937, you have people who are thinking, people who are different. So Rav Lazer comes back to America, and he spends the whole year, 38, planning, organizing, talking, and people are attracted to him. 1939, Agudat Yisrael holds its first convention in the United States. And it's an organization. You have an organization. Those of you who are active in the OU, you all know that the high point of the OU is the annual convention. Agudat Yisrael, you're active in Agudat Yisrael, the high point of the year is their convention. You have to have a public affair to get the people interested, excited, the teachers, the rabbanim, the speeches, etc. The singing today, the singing, the songs, the Hasidic music. All right? What's fascinating is, where was the first convention of Agudat Yisrael held in America? In Far Rockaway. 1939, Far Rockaway. So that tells you something right away, that I'm this body, ears, eyes is witness to. Far Rockaway became the first so-called wealthy Orthodox community in the United States. At that time, Far Rockaway was at the beach, was far away from the tenements on the east side. The Upper East Side was infinitely wealthier, but very, very little Yiddishkeit there. The Upper West Side was a mixed bag with a little bit Yiddishkeit, some wealth, but it was right adjacent to Harlem. When all is said and done, the Upper West Side was totally adjacent to Harlem. But Far Rockaway, at an early stage, Jews made a little money and they headed out to Far Rockaway, and you had from Jews in Far Rockaway. This tells you something else. New, what's adjacent to Far Rockaway today? The Five Towns. That was the spillover from Far Rockaway. And the wealthier people who live in Far Rockaway today, new, what did I tell you? They live where? I think they used the word West Lawrence. West Lawrence. You follow? Because Far Rockaway today is also a mixed bag. The further you go away from the Five Towns, I wouldn't advise walking alone 12 midnight on many of the streets. But the convention is at Far Rockaway. Now, Reb Lazer Silver is elected the first president of the United of Agudat Yisrael. Who are the two vice presidents? And here it's very fascinating. And here I'm empowering Simon to tell word by word what I'm about to say to Hillel Goldberg. Because yesterday when I announced what I would teach today, and I try to attract students, I try to be a salesman, I was in the rabbinate at 61 to 69, so I know what it is to be a salesman. So I mentioned I'm going to take on Art Scroll's version of Torah history. I'm going to take it on in my new book, big, but now minor league. So I saw a smirk on Hillel Goldberg's face. Ah, there goes Rakefet again. He's going to take on Oscar. What do I mean by that? okay, I want you to show me one page in all the Art Scroll books praising Reb Shlomo Hyman and telling the true story how Reb Shlomo Hyman got to America. And if you youngsters don't know who Reb Shlomo Hyman was, please make believe you heard the name so the ignorant to the second power pass for knowledgeable. But we'll fill you in after today's shiur, you'll know. Gentlemen, all of Torah in America on a high level goes back to one person's decision. He happens to be my cousin. I'm a blood relative. It's not why I'm telling you this. It's the truth. His name, Rabbi Bernard Revel. Rabbi Revel made the decision when people visited America in the early 20s, the late teens, 100 years ago. They laughed at YU. They laughed at Reitz. What is YU today? This is a yeshiva. It's an American version. What makes a school a school? The faculty. And Rabbi Revel decided he has to bring a world famous Rosh Yeshiva to America. And that's how he brought the Mecher Te'ilui, Reb Shlomo Palachek, to America. Because the Mecher came, this was a gone idea. We've spoken about him many times. I've published about him. You can read my published writings. But because the Mecher came, that opened up America. When the Mecher died, 1928, Reb Shimon Shkop took over. He would have remained in America, but he was ordered back to Europe. Then Reb Moshe Soloveitchik came. And because the Soloveitchik Reb Moshe came, his whole family came ultimately. And that's how Moriah Rebbe, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, Reb Baron Soloveitchik. You can go on and on. What came out of Rabbi Rebel's decision? This decision had tremendous impact on the non-YU world, or what you would call in popular language today the black world, or the right-wing world, or the Aguda world. The biggest rival of Yeshivas Reb Tzchol Chanan was Teira V'Das. Teira V'Das was the second yeshiva in America to begin an advanced program to give smicha, and they were the Brooklyn school. YU was for Bronx, Manhattan, but this was the real rivalry. And Torah V'Das was always a little bit frummer, using popular language, than Reitz. Mr. Mendel Lubitsch, the dean of Torah V'Das, his famous statement was, "Min daf opit na pinta lechassidus in Teira V'Das." We have to be careful to keep a small amount, a needle worth, if base, a pinta lechassidus, chassidut in Teira V'Das. All right. By 1930, Torah V'Das is on the map. But they too, people like Rabbi Yosef Weiss, they're not going to go to Torah V'Das. They're going to leave Torah V'Das. He wasn't the only one. A whole slew of Torah V'Das boys left to go uptown to Yeshivas Reb Tzchol Chanan to study with Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. Are you aware of that? Yeah, read Rabbi Weiss's biography. Listen to, I gave a hesped that Yomo videoed me. It was played in America. Remember, you're the one who told me when he died that year. Remember, I remember like yesterday. So now they need a Rosh Yeshiva. And this is how Reb Shlomo Hyman comes to America. Reb Shlomo Hyman, his years, 1892-1945. Didn't live long. Born in White Russia, studied at the Litvishi Yeshiva, studied with Reb Baruch Be'el, the Kamenetzer Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Baruch Be'el Leibovitch. You've all heard the name. He became, they say, one of the top two, three Talmidim of Reb Baruch Be'el. He may have been the biggest. May have been, what I do, knock it out again. Okay, sorry. He became the biggest Talmud of Reb Baruch Be'el Leibovitch. and ultimately they wanted him to teach in Kamenetz. Then World War I broke out. Afterwards he taught from Elchanan Wasserman. And afterwards from Chaim Moshe brought him to Vilna to head up the Ramelis Yeshiva there, also a name you should recognize, because when he left for America, who succeeded him as Rosh Yeshiva? Rabbi Zev Gustman, Rabbi Yisrael Zev Gustman of Netzach Yisrael. He was the Ramelis Rosh Yeshiva before the Holocaust, succeeding Reb Shlomo Hyman. Reb Shlomo Hyman came to America. Students loved him, but he wasn't Ma'arich Yamim. I can tell you a secret, that the man that founded BMT, the first dean, the person that changed the course of Anglo-Torah history, the man who sent me a telegram, there were no phones yet, that he wanted me to teach and changed my whole life, Rabbi Moshe Horowitz. Do you know why he went to New York? He was a Chicagoan. He went to New York in 1944 to go to Torah Vadas to study with Rabbi Shlomo Hyman. But Rabbi Shlomo Hyman was ill already. He dies. So he decided to go and join Reitz, which just had brought his Rebbe from Chicago to teach at Reitz. Who am I talking about? No, Reb David Lifshitz, the Tzuval Karav. You know Chaim Waxman. That's his father-in-law. That's Chaya's father. He was teaching in Chicago. Rabbi Belkin brought him to New York. Whitey Horowitz, we called him Whitey. There were two brothers. One was called Blackie, one was called Whitey. Their beards. One had a darker beard, one had a lighter beard. Whitey is the one who built BMT. His brother, I believe, was also in Chinuch, if I'm not mistaken. He was called Blackie. And Whitey Horowitz went to Torah Vadas with Rav Shlomo Hyman. He was a tremendous drawing card for anyone who wanted that type of education and wanted something more to the right of YU, of Reitz. And he died young. But you see, in 1939, he already was a Shem Dava. And now in parentheses, I see you, if Art Scroll would be honest in their various books on Mr. Mendelovich, the one Reb Samuel Fol Hirsch, give credit to Rabbi Revel. You don't like YU today? Fine, there are a thousand reasons not to like YU today. I believe those of you that heard yesterday's Shia, Vic was jumping for joy when he heard the Rechnitz repeat word by word the Rebbe's critique. I love Panovich. I don't love Panovich today. I'm very upset, very disappointed. But it doesn't mean I have to rewrite history. You have pride. I also was at the YU campus. I can't say everything made me overjoyed with what I saw with my own two eyes a few months ago. But all right, I can't rewrite history. Give credit. Because of the Mechita, because of the Soloveitchik family, Reb Shlomo Hyman comes to Torah Vadas. Give credit. All right. Now, he was elected one of the two vice presidents. Who was the other vice president? And this too, very fascinating. It reveals the era. The other, Reb Mordechai Shlomo Friedman, the Biyana Rebbe. And here Vic can tell you and certify what I'm about to say. There were Rebbeim in America before World War I, after World War I, but no Rebbe really caught on. The Statner, maybe to a certain degree, but not beyond the Lower East Side. The Biyana Rebbe, who came to America in the mid-20s, he, by the 30s, had a bit of a following.
His full name,
Reb Mordechai Shlomo Friedman. He's a direct Einagel, a grandson of the Rushina, of Reb Yisrael Friedman. It's the Rushina dynasty. The Rushina left seven children, six of them with Rebbeim. Each one had children. They branched all over. There basically isn't a Polish Rebbe alive today who was not of Ruzhina descent. Polish, Ukraine, perhaps White Russia, everyone has Ruzhina blood in him. And you know, in the course of a lifetime, you have met people who are Ruzhina Einiklach. It's inevitable because they're thousands upon thousands, if not tens of thousands, direct descendants. Fine, Ruzhina blood is Ruzhina blood. It's not now. I spoke in great detail about Ruzhin, but it must be 20 years ago. It's an interesting shita, but it's not. But I just want to. But I want to make this point. The Rebbeim came. All right, 1920s. I guarantee you that the Ruzhina, that the Biyana Rebbe on the Lower East Side of New York, had maybe a minion or two. By the 1930s, you had Hasidish Yidden, Jews who were running away from Hitler. All right, there was a Rebbe now. Not only that, you had students in Torah Vadas that were seeking a little Hasidus. Their souls longed for Hasidus. It's now a Rebbe in America. And here I'll let you in on a personal story. I write this up in Washington, but it's Eina Doima Ketiva Kiki Amira. Or should I say, when you write, it's one thing, but when the heart speaks, it's another. We in the Bronx, where we were growing up, I told you there were a million Jews. If there were 10 Shomer Shabbos people under the age of 17, above the age of 13, 15, I'm overstating the case. It was, believe me, Morty, you can't understand it. You grew up in Baltimore, was much better. Charlie grew up on the Washington Heights in Yekaland. So, a lot better, but the
hard
Bronx.
Hard to imagine. A million?
One over 1 million Jews in the Bronx.
10?
1 million.
It's 10, shall we shove it for a million?
Arrived, so there were a little more than 10, so thank you, son. But it was a spiritual wasteland. So there's one kid, Rabbi Moshe Bick, he was the biggest influence in the East Bronx. It was more East than where I lived. But I also fell under his influence. He was a great individual. He was a mismach of the yeshiva, probably the mid-30s, early-30s. Big yichus, probably also Ruzhin. He was from Meshbetz, big yichus. His uncle was Malka's parents' rav. When they had a big shaila, they would always go to his uncle. There were two. His father was a rav, his uncle was a rav. Quite a family. Continues until today. Part of it became even Frimmer, became Zionist, it went an Aliyah. There's a Rosh Yeshiva in Alon Shvut, Rabbi Ezra Bick. He is a nephew to Reb Moshe Bick. You understand, Charlie Bick was his father, was another brother in the family, and younger brother than Reb Moshe Bick. Yeah.
We had in your class, Izzy Bick.
Izzy Bick, also part of the family, my classmate, exactly. So this is the family. So this kid came East Bronx, started MTA, went to MTA for a few weeks, couldn't handle it. Sea cold, too cold, no warmth. Ran away to Torah Vadas. Now he ran away to Torah Vadas. A kid is seeking, searching. It's a teenage kid. Became a chassid, and they introduced him to a girl also from a typical American home, had become chassidish. I think Reb Moshe Bick made the shidduch, and they got married very young. Well, when you become a chassid living in Brooklyn, a Torah Vadas boy, he wants to convert others. If you read the yearbook, I think it was my high school yearbook, or my college, and I think high school. So they described me as a missionary. I was a B'nai Akivanik, trying to convert everyone to be a good B'nai Akivanik, Torah Va'avoda, Torah Va'avoda, etc. So he invites me to spend the Shabbos with him in Brooklyn. That Shabbos, I have never forgotten. It influences me until today, will influence me for eternity. First of all, Friday night, we daven in the little shtibbel, go back home, eat very quickly, run across the Brooklyn Bridge to the Lower East Side, to the Biyana shtibbel. He was a Biyana chassid. And here's the Rebbe, the immediate family, a few chassidim. We davened, we ate, we crossed the bridge. And the Biyana hadn't made Kiddush yet. He was still... And then here's a little American kid. These eyes saw Joe DiMaggio play, you understand? And these eyes also... I saw the Biyana Rebbe, I can't take the sight out of my mind. His eyes totally closed, wearing a shtreimel, a different type of garb. And then he made Kiddush. No, Morty, how long does your Kiddush take? I've heard it. We'll say 2.5 minutes maximum. The Biyana Rebbe made Kiddush, I would say 25 minutes. Every word would cover, not... It's overwhelming. If I know how to make Kiddush today, it's because I heard the Biyana's Kiddush. And I'll tell you something else. Someone would have tapped me on the shoulder and said, Arnie, you're listening to the Biyana Rebbe's Kiddush. One day, you're going to be a big influence and a big amount of help. And I'm not exaggerating. To his grandchildren, I would have looked at them and said, what, are you crazy? How do I come? I'm a little American third-generation kid, was Ken Gornish. I don't know anything. But that's life. If your heart is pure, you can achieve beyond description, beyond dreams. But we'll leave that. Let's come back here. Did you know the Biyana? Who we're talking about? So the Biyana, my connection with Biyana intensified because his son-in-law was the greatest teacher I had. I had his son-in-law. The year I started MTA was the year his son-in-law, Rabbi Dr. Meir Breyer, started, not Meir, the one that was here was Meir, and they were two brothers, Rabbi Dachem, it could be Menachem Breyer, Menachem and Meir, it's confusing. Meir went in Aliyah, he built the Gush. What Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Rabbi Yehuda Amital, the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Meir Breyer was the organizer, the money man, the mankal, the menahel klali, the general director, I think they call it in English. He built Alon Shvat, the yeshiva. So Rabbi Menachem Breyer was my teacher. Each year he went up a notch. 4 years I had him as a teacher, and I gained so much knowledge from him. His son, Menachem Breyer's son, is the Biyana Rebbe of today. He succeeded his grandfather. There was none, the boys were not willing to become Rebbeim, and they were looking and searching, and today the grandson is one of the well-known Rebbeim in Eretz Yisrael. The Biyana Rebbe, the grandson, it's not the Friedman name, the Breyer name, but this is a grandson of the Biyana. The Biyana was elected as the second vice president. So what does this show you? This shows you that here is Agudat Yisrael in America, and they're starting to live the dream of Aguda, Hasidim, Litvakin, under one roof. Unfortunately, what is your name? Are you going to be permanent, or you're just a guest today? Well, you have to see if... I can't hear.
As much as I can.
You're in Torah Traga?
Yeah.
Did I speak with you? We met at a certain point.
Yeah,
over.
We met in
Rechavia. That's correct. So, you'll give me a name after class. I want to learn the name. But I want to say to you, you could never have a good Israel today, unfortunately. They split again. The enmity. Chassidim, the Tvakin, oh, what goes on today. But this was a different era yet. And you see how they're trying to organize, and they're trying to bring both branches together. I have to... Yeah, well, he's playing the main role. It's not just his influence. He's the man behind it. He's the man raising the money. He's the man bringing the people out. He's the man erasing the convention. And did this is Reb Lazer Silver at his finest. In addition, and this is very important, in every talk, and you can see in my book, in the Silver Era, I cite it, I give you the sources, every talk that Reb Lazer gives, his dream is to go way beyond Hasidim and Litvakin, Mizrahi and Agudat Yisrael as well. And this is Reb Lazer, and he talks in public. I cite it. He doesn't give up on that idea. Remember, we spoke about it last time we met. He doesn't give up on that idea. Why do we need tension? Why do we need inner politics? Mizrahi and Aguda, we can achieve in unity much more than with divisions. And this is his dream. Unfortunately, a dream that will never materialize. But it's on the agenda in 38, 39, 40, etc. After World War II, we'll talk about it. It can no longer be spoken. It can no longer be mentioned in public. The chasm, the split, is there. And there's no way to bridge it, because they're bringing from Europe the refugees, the immigrants, the old prejudice, the old machlokes that you had in Europe will take over America, and unfortunately, to a certain degree, it continues until today. Something else that's very fascinating about Reb Lazer Silver, and actually a picture survives, I believe I published it in the Silver Era. It's a very well-known picture. I'm sure it's online. A picture survives to validate what I'm about to tell you. In 1940, a great Torah personality comes to America. Running away from Hitler, obviously he ran away from the communists. He's now an old man, a sick man, a crippled man. He's in a wheelchair. But with the coming of the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, a new chapter dawns in America. Interestingly enough, Reb Lazer Silver goes to see the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, and there's a picture of the two of them together, and he pleads with the Rebbe to join the nascent young Agudat Yisrael. It's in an embryonic state right now, but if the sixth Rebbe will join, it will be a big push. It will attract many more Jews who have a connection to the Rebbe, and there were Jews all over the United States, particularly in Brooklyn, but in Chicago, Detroit, and Boston, wherever you turn, there were Jews. There were Jews in the rabbinate. There were Jews that had a connection to Lubavitch. Lubavitch was a major movement 100 years ago. And he asked the Rebbe to join. And the Rebbe tells him, "You're not the first one to ask me. The Mizrahi asked me to join. But I don't have any details on that. But I'm sure it's true." He says, "And I certainly am not going to join the Mizrahi." But he says, "I cannot join good either. I will help you. I will, you know, give encouragement, but I cannot join officially." And the reason behind this, I can tell you in parentheses, is very obvious if you heard my shurim on the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The reason is very simple. Lubavitch views itself as involvement, even leading the totality of the Jewish people. And whenever they would ask the seventh Rebbe who to vote for, "New, you tell me in Kfar Chabad," what was the Rebbe's answer? "Vote for the firmest party." And that's a fabulous answer, because you can interpret it as you wish. You'll say to Rakefet, "Who should I vote for?" "Vote for the firmest party." "Who's the firmest party?" "Well, my wife votes Meir Kahana. I vote for Mizrahi." They're from his party, you understand? It depends where your hashkafer is. I was just talking with Morty, with Professor Tarragon, about the coming elections in Jerusalem, who to vote for. So I have to say, I have to see what happens, but the way things stand now, it's the first time in my life I'm going to vote for the Agudat Yisrael candidate, for Yossi Deutsch. I'm going to vote for a very right-wing party, that'll be King. I'm going to vote to the right of Maftal, and my wife is happy because she says, "Ah, you finally woke up to vote for." I say, "Yeah, because this won't be a wasted vote. He was in the government before, the local government, so we'll get him in again." And he says the truth. When Agudat Yisrael sells Torah down the river for some money, he attacks them. He says the truth. And Yossi Deutsch, I have to be honest with you, I'm very impressed. The man served in the army, and more than that, he will not go to the Treif parade. Everyone else, Elkin's assistant went to the Treif parade. Berkowitz himself went to the Treif parade. You have no Treif parade. I don't even want to honor them by mentioning the name. But the gays, God have mercy, what they've done to Yiddishkeit and done to rabbis, children of Gedolei Yisrael. Well, we have to be all, have to be there, have to be that. I've dealt with gays. I'm teaching Torah 60 years. And forget it, I've done my research. I can give you a postgraduate class on that level about the whole story of gays. And 2% of the population is born that way. They have to struggle. Fine, the animal kingdom is the same thing. It's 2%, maybe a drop under, maybe a drop more. But when you get involved in giving it, so that you're willing to accept it, what's the word you want to use?
Legitimacy.
Give it stunts. Giving it, that it's fine, they're born, you have to have mercy, pity. Banishams, another 10 gays, why be, God have mercy. Why be hetero? Be homo, it's easy, I know how to talk to it. I don't want to spell that out, it hurts my mouth. But no one says persecute them, chas v'chalila. But if the Mechal Shabbos are going to hold a parade, the Chilul Shabbos, I'm going to oppose it. This is no different, 100%. Okay, anyway, be it as it may, this is a snapshot, 1940. But watch, yes, Yitzchak.
What is really his name? Is it Blazer Silva or
Eliezer
Silva?
It's Eliezer, but the whole world called him Reb Blazer. Uh-huh. That's Eliezer. Gone Reb Eliezer Silva. Eres. His sefer, Anfei Eres. You follow? Eliezer Eres Rav Zilber. That's his name. Yes.
I found his street in Kibbutz Matityahu.
Where?
Kibbutz Matityahu. It's in Kiryat Sefer. It's like...
Oh, you're talking about... Yeah. So there's a street named after him. So I can tell you even better. If you walk out of this building, walk two blocks, what do you hit? Go out the road and walk another half block, you hit Yeshivat Hebron. Okay? Yeshivat Hebron was originally on Rehov HaYeshiva, named after the yeshiva, right off Kikar Shabbat. It's like a half block away. There's still a yeshiva there. The yeshiva Hebron grew. They needed a new campus, needed something big, something that they could build on. So the city gave them, Givat Mordechai was then the end of the world. But Givat Mordechai, it was closed to traffic on Shabbos, so there were a lot of from Jews living here. So they gave them part of the orchard. This was an orchard here, where we're standing. When I came in, this was an orchard. The orchard continued all the way down to Nayot. So they gave them a good part, and now they're having the grand laying ceremony for Hebron Yeshiva. Well, of course, Reb Lazar Silver's invited. He was... Agudat HaRabbanim has lost its pristine position, but he was a shame dover. Towards the end of his life, he helped raise money. You must be at the ground laying ceremony. So he flew in for one day, but the plane was late. He landed at Lod. It was a little airport then. You have no idea. When we came in Aliyah, I used to take my kids. You go up and you would see the planes coming in, taking off. Today you can't go anywhere near because of security. It's a different world then, obviously. He lands in Lod and he's really befuddled. It's 2:00. The ceremony's beginning. They're not going to wait for him. So he asks around. Within 5 minutes, he hires a helicopter to take him from the airport. In the middle, I know this from my witnesses, and it was written up in the papers, that in the middle of the ceremony, a helicopter appears, lands in the orchard, and out jumps a little Jew with a long beard and a big high hat. And he was the last speaker at the groundbreaking ceremony. So they should put a plaque up. This is where Reb Lazer Silver surprised everyone, coming out of the helicopter. Okay, now we've come to the high point of today's shiur. 1940, he's going to hold the convention. And notice, 1939, the first convention was in Far Rockaway. Now 1940, being Reb Lazer Silver and being an ishiyut, a personality, no, we're not going to go where the Jews are. We're going to go where the reform is. And he chooses Cincinnati. Now, obviously, Cincinnati was his backyard. He's the Rebbe of Cincinnati. But Cincinnati did not have a large Orthodox community. Cincinnati was famous, the home of the Reform movement, the Hebrew Union College, which until today is still in Cincinnati. There's a branch in New York, Jewish Institute of Religion became a branch of Hebrew Union College. The president just crashed, he was piloting a plane. Shabbos morning, I don't know where he was flying to, maybe to Temple Emmanuel to hear Malam Itzchot, then flying the plane to Temple Emmanuel to hear the sermon there. But he just was killed in a plane crash in New Jersey. Shabbos morning, Saturday morning, the president of Hebrew Union College. So Hebrew Union College, this is the center of reform, and Reb Lazer calls for the convention there. How he managed it is beyond words. He has them put up an Erev around his shul in the area where all the people are staying. The Reform are biting their lips, are kissing, maledicting him. Jews, Shabbos, are walking with strimals within spitting distance of Hebrew Union College. You gotta know who you're dealing with here. This is the same Reb Lazer Silver. The most famous story is when he saw that the old area, is going bad. He said, we gotta move the shul to this fanciest area in Cincinnati. I think it was called the Plum Street area. Anyway, they moved the shul, they raised the money, now they need a mikveh. The Reform Jews go crazy, it's unsanitary, it's this, it's that. And they go to court, and Reb Lazer gets the son of the President of the United States, later to be Senator Robert Taft, to represent the mikveh. And the senator and Taft walks into court. The case was dropped because the Reform knew there's no way a judge is going to rule against the president's son. And he was a personality unto himself, Senator Taft. There's more to the story because he has to now tell Senator Taft how you present the case. So he writes out 10 reasons why a mikveh is so important. A mikveh before Rosh Hashanah, before Yom Kippur, for this reason, that reason, conversion, and the 10th reason, so a husband and wife can resume relations. And Senator Taft reads and he says, I think the 10th reason is the most important. These are all true stories, take my word for it. I did my research, you all know that my Silver Era book was well received even beyond YU circles. But this is Reb Lazer. Now I'll tell you another part of the story that I heard from the Rav. Now you should remember who this man was. Look, I think I spoke yesterday in class about the millionaires and Shabbos. Did I speak about it in class, right? It was in class. Your my family, your friends, your neighbors. I spoke yesterday. These are people who I gave a divrei. They asked me to give a divrei Torah and Beseda. I gave a divrei Torah, and I don't like the divrei Torah and Pashin Bereishit. But I gave them hell that life is about kipshua, getting rid of tohu vohu, what we've done in Israel. And I'm talking to people and beyond people. One is worth. They called him the first, one of the few Orthodox Jewish billionaires. The other one is only worth a face half a billion. The other one maybe is worth a face 20 million. And it was what I said yesterday. It's very funny. But all right, we'll leave that out. They can hear it on tape. So these are money people, and they felt bad. And then when I finished talking, so they tell me, Arnie, you've given us a guilt conscience. The guy said, forget about it. I don't want you in Israel. I want your grandchildren. And some of the grandchildren are starting to come. We have to, what are you created for? What do you live for? So just this morning, you don't know who Yosef Alon is. He's worked here for many years. He runs the computers. He's a genius in that field. He's a Machon Lev graduate. A lovely, lovely person. You've seen him around, Yosef Alon. So he told me this next Wednesday, he's out. He's going into the army, electrical engineer. My grandson is going in the same day. These are officers, these are contributing. I gave him a big yashikayach. I said, this is why God put us in the world. If he had told me he just made $10 million, I wouldn't be as happy as hearing from him. He's going into the army as a career man. And this is why we're here in the world. Rablazer Silva, the chesed that he did, the man was selfless. I think if you've read the Silveria, you know that ultimately the shul in Cincinnati stopped paying him. They used to pay his wife. Because in those days, they paid in cash. Everything was cash. And he would walk home from shul, and Yomo would come over to him and tell him he knows a Yitoma that has to get married, has no money. He'd give away his whole salary. So they used to pay his wife. So now when he called the convention in Cincinnati, you never heard this from the Rebbe. I did. He called the convention in Cincinnati. People all over, what? That's Meshuggah, he's crazy. How many Jews are going to go to Cincinnati? So I said, don't worry. The word went out that if you need money for the fair, Reb Lazer will give it to you. He'll lend it to you. He'll raise the money. And the Rebbe said publicly, if all the Jews for whom Reb Lazer did a favor for from the New York area would go to Cincinnati, they wouldn't have enough planes with seats to take them all. This was Reb Lazer. And B'sach HaKol, there was a tremendous crowd in Cincinnati. The synagogue was filled beyond. There's a whole description from the newspapers. And this was Reb Lazer at his finest.
What year was this?
1940. Now, this convention, and it included Shabbos. The original convention in Far Rockaway was limited to weekdays, like a Rabbinic Council of America convention. It was always weekdays because the rabbis have to go back to the shul Shabbos. In Far Rockaway, there were plenty of Rabbanim. The Rabbanim have to be in their shuls for Shabbos. But in Cincinnati, he dafka wanted them there for Shabbos so that the people, the Reform, the Mechalalei Shabbos, the Ochlin, the Velet and Treifat, would see there's a Shabbos, they're Jews, they're Strimals, America is changing, a new morning is dawning. Now, unfortunately, right before this convention, Reb Chaim Isaac Wyszynski died. And here I can tell you, you don't start to understand who Reb Chaim Isaac Wyszynski was. All right, over the decades, I've quoted him many times from his psakim, from his svarim. Chaim Isaac was a Lamdan Muvok, a Posek Muvok, a Gonad Deer. Reb Aaron Soloveitchik once told me about Reb Chaim Isaac that what was his greatness, he said to me. There were other Rabbanim who had his Bekiyah. There were other Rabbanim who had his knowledge. But when he had a shaila, he knew exactly where to go, where to find the answer, where to find the tshuva, what had to be applied in this case. He was a gaon adir, Reb Chaim Moser. He was a great, great human being. Nebuchadnezzar had one child, one daughter, and she was a teenager. She was engaged, and she died engaged, a young girl, one child, went through all that heartbreak, but continued. There's a beautiful story from 38, 39, where a young yeshiva man comes to get a bracha. He's going to get married, and they're all running away from Hitler at that point already, who had parents, who had family. And Reb Chaim Moser takes the girl and says to her, it's all in Yiddish, I'm saying it in English, do you know Hilchot Taret Mishpacha? You don't have a mother near you, who's teaching you? And she said, no, I don't know too much. He says, takes her aside, leaves his office, and he sits down with her in the hallway, and he goes through the basics of Taret Mishpacha. And then he asked his Rebbetzin to take care of the wedding and see that they have a nice su'udah. This was Reb Chaim Moser. I knew people who knew him intimately. I knew people told me stories about him. I davened in a shul named after him, Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Moser. I was bar mitzvah there. I was, my ufruf was there. You don't know who this person was. And everything depended on him. Everything, the whole Litvish world, when they poured in, running away from Hitler, the independent Lithuania. I can't go into details. I just know what I'm talking about. We'll come back to him when we talk about the Van Chatzalah. Everyone depended on him. And people told me, survivors, my own Rebbeim, that when Reb Chaim Moser died, they knew it was hopeless. They knew Europe was finished. They knew they had to get out. Some of the Mira Dafka went out via Kobe, Japan, and then Shanghai because Reb Chaim Moser died. He wasn't alive anymore. Everything is finished. We're not going to succeed. So now they're going to eulogize Reb Chaim Moser at the Aguda Convention. And who do they call upon? Moria Rebbe. Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. Now you have to understand, it's very important to understand, the Rav then was not the Rav. All right, he was an article of Reb Chaim, a genius mind, but he didn't. He was a rabbi in Boston, you know, he was a youngster yet. He didn't have a full beard. He didn't carry the prestige that he carries today. And here, Mori Rebbe gets up and he eulogizes Reb Chaim Moser Grishansky. The biggest Aguda leaders have whispered in my ears, there never was a more right-wing Aguda expression in the United States than the Rav's Hesped for Reb Chaim Moser Grishansky. It's the heart of pure Agudat Yisrael theology. The essence, the heart. A guy named Rakefet has spent many lectures explaining how the Rav changed his mind and moved into a different gestalt. Correct. There was a guy named Rakefet recorded 9 hours in the Kollel. Years ago, 6 different 1.5 hour shayrim. It's the biggest seller the OU had of their tapes. It's now in YU Torah, the Rav and his journey to religious Zionism. No one, but no one, has found a mistake in what I've said. And Rabbi Lichtenstein, I quote him afterwards, I see he pushed here, published there. It's exactly, we're thinking exactly the same way.
Is it available today as a CD, or is it
still a print? No, it's available online. It's tapes, 6 tapes. They don't sell CDs. That's over. The OU got out of that business, whatever the reasons are, because everything is online today. those days you bought 6 tape, remember, beautiful package, Kanayin Hara. Again, who appreciates it today? My grandchildren grew up in a different world. My great-grandchildren certainly can't start to comprehend what I'm talking about. But all right, let's record the truth here. But at that, we have to be honest, at that moment in 1940, there was no greater expression of Agudat Yisrael than Mori Rebbe's Hesped for Reb Chaim Eisen. Now, the Hesped is readily available. Parts of it have been translated into English. I'll just give you the gist of it, the gist of it. What do I mean, Agudat Yisrael? So the Rebbe spoke about Reb Chaim Eisen, that he was the high priest, the Kohen Gadol of the Jewish people. And what characterizes the Kohen Gadol? Among his begadim that only he has, the tzitz and the choshen mishpat. What does the tzitz stand for? Holy thought, sheilot, halacha, shas, poskim. Who do you turn to for a psak, for kamta lita lakoin sheyebe yamim achem ashabim, to the gadol hadar? Right. We all agree with this part. When I have a shayla, I have to go to a Talmud Chacham. Whenever I was much younger, started teaching in Israel, Reb Aaron came in Aliyah. Whenever I had a question, I would go to Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. It's obvious. Over the years, I went to Reb Avadya Yosef, spoke with Reb Shlomo Gorenchik and Reb Shlomo Gorin in learning. Reb Unterman. Yes, Rav Yisi Yehuda Unterman, I had a shayla, we called him, all right. No one argues with this. This is axiomatic to how a Jew has to live. Murray has a shayla, he doesn't go to the socks manufacturers in China. Where do you get your socks from? China or elsewhere today?
China.
China, all right, Baruch Hashem. You have a shayla, you have to go to your Rav, to your Rebbe. But the Choshen Mishpat represents Klal Yisrael, the Shvatim. And they have different problems. Economic, anti-Semitism, social problems, civil problems, interaction with the Gentiles. Well, these are a myriad of questions. Who do you go to? And Agudat Yisrael said, just as you asked the halachic questions of the Gadol Hadar, the high priest, you ask the social, economic, daily questions of Klal Yisrael, of the high priest. They are the only ones who can give the answers. What do we call it in popular Agudat language? Da'at Torah, Das Teira. Some even wrote, if you recall my lectures on Agudat Yisrael, on Das Teira, some even wrote, Rabbi Weinberger of Williamsburg, Young Israel of Williamsburg, Rabbi Weinberger wrote, Das Teira, a little less than a heavenly voice. It's like a bat kol. Infallibility, that word comes up. And the Rav calls Reb Chaim Meiser his Das Teira. He was absolutely right. You have to ask him the She'elot, both of the Tzitz and of the Chon Mishpat. Wow. And you see how this translates? I'll come back to a question that we've struggled with for many, many decades already. Question that only the people over 50 in this room can appreciate. Russian Jews, subjected, enslaved, threatened. Forget that you're a Jew, you're a Soviet person. Never allowed to express their Judaism. What do we do? Do we demonstrate? It's a very delicate question. If you demonstrate, you get the Politburo angry. Or if you don't demonstrate, they'll go on persecuting the Jews, sending them to Siberia, or executing the Chabad teachers of Torah. a delicate question. Well, if you take the Agudah approach, who do you ask? The Rabbanim? Right or wrong? If you take a non-Agudah approach, which later characterizes the Rav, who do you ask? And the Rav said this publicly. We have to ask the experts on relations with Russia. Will demonstrations harm or will they help? And I heard the Rav say this. You can go to Rav Henkin, Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin, Sfarim, Shedot Meshut B'nei Banim, where if you recall, I showed you this very tshuva, and he quotes the Rav. We have to have expert input. And I suffered with this very issue. I suffered. I felt like a fool. And I suffered. And I was caught, crucified. You're looking what I suffered. When our demonstrations for Soviet Jewry and when what the Mossad was doing, or no one knew it was the Mossad, but when more and more and more people said we were to Russia, when it's not just Rakefet said he was to Russia. Rabbi Rubin said he was to Russia. And take it, multiply it. I sent over 200 and others with the Mossad. Okay. So then the Haredim got involved. They couldn't believe Rakepit's pictures. Jews in Russia learning Torah, observant. Do you read Washington? How I got a good at Israel involved in what Rav Moshe Sherer said to me. This is all facts. This is, I don't need third person. These ears and these eyes, this mouth. So then, a very important personage of the Agudah world approached the Mossad. We want to organize a demonstration in B'nai Brak. And this was about 86, 87 already, when we started to see that the more you demonstrate, the Iron Curtain starts to fall. There were patches, openings in the curtain. So the Mossad put me in charge of relations with this individual. So one thing I can tell you, I got out of it, fabulous restaurants, glatt kosher. He owned them, actually, in Tel Aviv. I never ate better in my life. In those days, I still ate meat. Today, I would say, let's go to your milchiger one, not the fleischiger one. And in the middle of our negotiations, and I'm explaining to him, and you got to understand, I'll give you a little insight. The Mossad went with the viewpoint that we're never to say we're anti-communist. We're never to say we're anti-Russian. We love Russia. We love communism. No. But what we want is reunification of families. And since the Russian law, the communist law, allows for reunification of families, these are Jews whose families were separated by World War II. And this is within the Russian legal system, and even within, pardon me for using the expression, their theological system. It goes, it plays. So I was giving him all the advice not to get up and maledict Russia, just to stress this, that these Hasidic Jews whose cousins are here, parents are here, children there, this is what has to be stressed. This is why we're demonstrating. Don't go beyond that. And in the middle of our meetings, so we're now getting ready, Rabbi Teitz comes, he was in his old age already, comes to Israel, emergency meeting, goes to Rav Shach, goes to B'nai Brak. Chas v'chalila, the Rabbanim say if we demonstrate, they will persecute the Jews all the more and kill the Jews all the more. Exactly what was caused by demonstrations against Hitler in the 1930s that we'll come back to. You see what I'm talking about? You see that there? And I was so...
torpedoed the whole thing?
Totally torpedoed it. I was so embarrassed. I had established the relationship with this Rebbe, I'm talking about Rebbe Yisrael Halperin right now. Halperin Eyes, that's what he, the optical, the multimillionaire, Talmid Chacham, wrestler. I knew in my youth, he came to America, a Jewish wrestler with a Magen David, who's Shomer Shabbos, a Magen David on his tongues, a character par excellence, but a gaon with big yichus, the Halperin family, the Chazon Ish, his father was the Chazon Ish's main support. Who are we talking about? And he descended from Gedolei Yisrael, the Seder HaDorot. This is and I met others, and I'm not exactly a guy, a shagets. They were impressed too. Look who represents the Mossad. I could learn better than anyone in the room, and etc. And they were impressed, and I told them it's not so that you know. But here was the clash. Rakefet is saying, ask the experts, the social experts, the professors, the Russian scholars, the people who are on top of it right now, here and now, then you can issue a psak. But don't go with something we're repeating from the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. This is exactly the clash. And Simon, come back to this drasha. Mori Urebi, pure agudas theology. Don't you dare mention professors, experts, Nobel Prize winners. Das Tera. You go to the Kohen Gadol for the tzitz and the choshen mishpat. And Charlie, who was the prime example of this Kohen Gadol, who wore the tzitz and the choshen mishpat in our generation? Reb Chaim Meiser, Krizhensky. Got it? Unbelievable. 1940 in Cincinnati. Well, as a result of this talk, Murray, number one, Murray Rebbe became a lot more famous. People, Rabbanim, were flabbergasted at his oratorical ability. And Yomo, I'm going to tell you a little story. No one but no one in the 20th century equaled the Rav in oratorical ability. Again, these ears heard from Rebbe. Where did he get it from? He said, as a kid, when he studied in Cheder with Rabbi Riesberg, the Chabotnik, Rabbi Riesberg was a fabulous teacher. He wasn't a gadladar in Lamdanut, the Rav said, but he could inspire a class. Go to Rakefet's work, the Rav, and pick up some of the drushes of Rabbi Riesberg. But more than that, when the Rav moved to Warsaw, he said he used to go to hear the famous Dashanim in Warsaw. And he gave many names.
Rabbi
Riesberg. He was one of them, of course. And he said, that's where I learned how to preach, how to give a drasha. And this drasha, merapsin igra, if I can use a Talmudic expression. And you want more proof? When I came in Aliyah, got involved, learned the Israeli scene. So it always troubled me that the average good Jew in Geula, Meir Sharim, the average Talmud Chacham, knew so little of the Rav. And then I got involved with Russia, and I came back the first time from Russia, February 1981, and a few weeks later, I helped organize Shvut Ami, it used to be part of it, it's all story to it, but I helped organize it as a, based upon the concept of BMT. What made BMT so unique? We teach Torah to Anglos in English. The whole concept of Shvut Ami, we teach Torah to Russians in Russian. And by the way, one of the early conferences, Shabbatot, was right on this campus with Russians from Shvut Ami who were starting to come in, and some of them wanted Torah. And I got to know the Rosh Yeshiva of Shvut Ami. It's Reb Aryeh Levine's grandson-in-law, Reb Lazer Kugel. Reb Lezer Kugel, this is Reb Yoshev's family, that was an uncle. So I gave Reb Lezer a few tapes of the Rav, a Tshuva Drasha, a Yortzeit Drasha, and here was a man who himself was Bucky in Shas and Paiskim, who taught for many years in Harry Fishel. He was a man who was a grandson-in-law of Rabbi Levine. He was a man who was Rabbi Yashiv's nephew. He was astounded. He said never in his life had he heard anyone like the Rav. You understand? In Yiddish. And this was the convention, this was the Rav. All right, I want to end off the class. Obviously, I'll come back to Agudat Yisrael, come back to America, come back to Reb Lezer, but all of you are asking a simple question that I've dealt with over the decades, so I'm going to be very brief. Mark is asking, ¿Qué pasa? Know what ¿Qué pasa? Means? Spanish. What happened? Rebbe, you're talking about the Rebbe, you're talking about your Rebbe. You're portraying him so beautifully as a great agudist. What happened? What happened? And yes, it has to be said publicly. Those of you who grew up in Chinuch Atzmai, you grew up with Art Scroll, so you get the impression no one ever changes their mind. A Gadol B'Yisrael is born with a kippah on his head. I can tell you, Eidut Ne'emana, I have many, many, I have only daughters, but beyond that, God has a sense of humor. I have, and Baruch Hashem, many grandsons and many great-grandsons. Oh, I get a Mazel Tov, Morty, Charlie. We had a great-granddaughter last Wednesday night, which broke the tie. Until Wednesday, I had as many greats as grand. Now I have more greats than grand. And in Chol HaMoed, we had an engagement party. A grandson got engaged. So Baruch Hashem, I've barely survived. That much I can tell you. All I remember about Juntif, I was, at least they're driving me, my daughter driving me. We visited, we're right beneath Bakan, where the tragedy was yesterday. I have a grandson now in Leshem. So we were there for a big sukkahs party. Then the next day, they did the engagement party, Mitzvah Netofa. Were you ever in Mitzvah Netofa? It's new. Where is it? Right next to Tiberias. Right under the Golden Heights, Kanayin Hara, Baruch Hashem. I saw Jordan from many vantage points, that much I can tell you. So what happened is very simple. The Rav developed a different theology, which he later states that when it comes to halacha, there's no question you have to go to the Kohen Gadol. There's no question psak is given to Basav Adam. You all know the Gemara of Tanur the Achnai. You all know the Sugya in Rosh Hashanah, when Rosh Hashanah is, when Yom Kippur is. We decide. You're never to look up. You have to ask the Gedolim, Velo Tasum, and Adavashay, Yigidacha, Yaminu Smol. When it comes to non-halachic questions, it's not we who decide. We can make decisions. Gadol Yisrael can guide us, but we have to look up and see what God wants. And Yosef Erchab is the Rav's famous example, what the Machloket was about. Should we get ready for Egypt? Shouldn't we? You have to look up and see. If not for Yosef HaTzadik, we never would have survived the Egyptian exile. So the Rav, World War II, had a great impact upon him. That this concept of not consulting experts, not getting involved with economic, civil, military, social factors, and no great Rav can know this all. They just have on YouTube, God have mercy, that they came to Reb Chaim Kinevsky's for a bracha for something in Beit Shemesh, and he asked, where is Beit Shemesh in America? He didn't know what they were talking about. It's on, look today in the Olamam Shel Charedim. I didn't finish looking because I can't waste too much time on that. I leave that for when I can't concentrate in deep things, so 9:30 at night, I can look at B'Olamam Shel Charedim. But Reb Chaim Kinevsky saying, where is it in America? And you'll see on B'Olamam Shel Charedim. And the Reb said, we always have to look up. And after World War II, we see that Mizrahi was 100% correct. They were the Yosef HaTzadik Shel Dorenu. The brothers laughed at Yosef, but if not for Yosef, we would have never survived Egypt. If not for the Mizrahi, where would the Jews go? Where would the survivors go? How could there be a rebirth? We need Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And I have to tell you, and I have to be honest, they are good at Yisrael today. Maybe in theory they'll still quote Das Teira. Halacha l'maisa, they have come a very, very long way. And today they're integrating. No, a good Israel in America is not real a good Israel anymore. That's American OU, a little bit frimmer, that's all. They're certainly integrated, a good Israel in America. We're talking a good Israel here, where you don't have, how many medical doctors do you have a good system? How many lawyers, how many accountants? We punish a lot of a good in America. What an organization. But they too, the attitude today, they are overjoyed with what's happened in the state of Israel. The Mapai no longer rules. Kids with beard and payas are all over Israeli life. You turn on your television and you'll see reporters with beard and payas, women with tichels, women in the Knesset with shaitels. We now have a Supreme Court justice, the first woman to cover her hair full time, an einikel of Rav Arieli. Oh, what's going on today? Rav Shach's assistants, his right hand, his daughter is now a judge. She wears a shaitel. She's from that element. It's a different world. So I have to be honest. Don't judge a gooder of today with what the Rav said in 1940. A gooder too has come a long way. And if I may quote Rakefet to you, many of the agudistim of today are no different than the Mizrachistim of 1948 and 1949. And there's a lot of truth to it. And you want a stronger proof? In 48, 49, Agudah and Mizrahi ran a joint ticket in the election. We may see that one day again. There's Agudah on its left is integrating. Mizrahi on its right. We have a lot to learn from Agudah. Both of us can learn from each other. Could be I'm more of a visionary, more positive than I should be, but I'd rather be guilty of avat chinam than sinat chinam. Plain and simple. Yes, Rabbi Rubin.
When you say that in Halacha you go to the go, and in social economic issues you go to heaven.
No.
That sounds exactly
no, right. I don't mean you go with the Rav. You're misquoting the Rav.
That's right. I think you did.
No. What?
You go to experts,
and then you make a decision. But the Rav said in Yosef Achav, then you have to reevaluate if it succeeds or not.
He had a reason for that also. Don't forget, the Rav's first name was what?
Yosef.
So he identified with Yosef and his brother. He himself.
He identified with Yosef HaTzadik.
Because their brothers were there with the firm world, and Yosef was himself a Zionist, a Mizrahiist, and he was against them, and they were against him. And yet he was the right one because he realized it's no longer good to be pastor.
Right, we are saying exactly the same thing, but let me make it clear. When the Rav said that you get expert advice, it's expert advice and then you paskin. But no matter what, with non-halachic matters, you have to reevaluate. You see, with Tanur D'Achnayi, there's no reevaluation. God says, Tamei. Tahar, you throw a loba shemayim he. You got a paskin what the bacon shemat the paskin. You follow? But with hashkafa, is it working? I can have the greatest concept of the world of yeshiva university. Well, we got a judge on the ground. Yeshiva University had 5,000 graduates last year, let's say. How many is Shomer Torah and Mitzvot? So you have to see what the results are. Today, it's a lot better than it used to be. When we went to MTA in the 40s into the 50s, there were many kids who became a Mechallelei Shabbos. You went to Yeshiva College in the 50s into the early 60s, 40s, 50s, early 60s, 30s. They were the feeder for Jewish Theological Seminary. How many conservative rabbis came out of Reeds? You follow? So you have to evaluate. It could be it's not your problem. Could be there's nothing you can do. Could be you have to have a better curriculum. Could be you have to deal with the problems that the rabbis are going to face in the communities. And ultimately, you take a look at what a rabbi studies today to get smicha from YU. It's infinitely more than we had to do. They have all these secondary classes because they want to meet these challenges. And to a certain degree, Chovevei Torah was very helpful because Chovevei Torah introduced the broad curriculum and it became a challenge to Reitz on that level. And Reitz has responded in dignity. So anyway, according to the Rav, it's an ongoing process. You cannot say, like a chassid will say, like we spoke about yesterday, Reb Menashe Klein, what? You're going to renounce pages? You're going to flip numbers? Why was he opposed? Yeshli habei tamim. It's like the Divrei Chaim in relation to Mishim Matzahs. Hatam kamusi madi. Why he opposes it? But what's wrong with you? But Rakefet hit the nail. I think I was absolutely right. Chadasha somen haTorah. We didn't down that way in Munkach. We didn't down that way in Vishnitz. But you saw how Reb Moshe, exact opposite of Reb Menashe Klein, unbelievably, he says to the rabbi, daven at home, flip the pages, Reb Moshe. But you heard what I said, okay? So I don't want to, God forbid, I don't mean look up to heaven and close your eyes and sing Shema Yisrael. It means you have to judge, but if God wills differently, all right, you have to take that into consideration. And that example I gave you with Rabbi Teitz, you have no idea the heartache it caused me. I was literally ashamed because I'm dealing with people who are not Shomer Torah Mitzvot, and here a rabbi comes from America, I don't know what he's talking about. The Mossad was on, you don't know, they were on top of the world when it came to Russian Jews. Do you know there was a teleprinter, today it's all emails, but there was a teleprinter in the Russian part of the Mossad. Do you know that teleprinter was going 7/24 from all over the world? Information was coming in on what's going behind the Iron Curtain in Russia. And then they would evaluate it. They would print it out. It would go to experts. They would evaluate it. The Mossad would decide what to do with his operation, where to send you when you went to Russia next as a so-called tourist. They would decide where money has to go for the prisoners of Zion. And other matters went on to the government. The foreign ministry had to work hand in hand where it affected public relations and public policy. But to say you come to a Rav who's totally isolated and he's going to tell you what to do, well, according to the Rav, you can't work that way. According to his husband, Reb Chaim Moshe, all right, it's Das Torah. All right, I think, all right, we've made the point. So let me reiterate. I have a drop more to do. Let me just reiterate. First of all, I want to thank everyone for coming. I want to thank the sub-students for listening. And I want to thank them when the submarine surfaces. I thank you again for your kind words. What did we do today? Well, this is a good America. We're not finished yet. This is Race of Silva. But the high point of the shiur is when it comes to Cincinnati, the Rav's Hesped from Chaim Moshe. And this is really the heart of the issues of the last 100 years since Aguda was organized, where Mizrahi and Aguda different. Will we ultimately become one again? I hope so. Will everyone become one? Not till Mashiach comes, because that's the nature of the Jew, Am Kishei Oref. But the nucleus, the nuclei of Aguda and Mizrahi We're not that far apart today. And if you notice, Naftali Bennett, who certainly is not a Talmud Chacham, he is in close contact with the Tsar HaBrigot Yaakov Litzman. And that tells you something. And even in Yerushalayim, could be, it'll be a little bit better next time around. All right, now, I took care of that. Now I want to tell you an amazing story, a Chassidic Rebbe story on Rakefet. As you recall, we had a very sad time at the start of the year. My Talmud, a graduate of the Kollel, Rev Yosef Klausner, died. And he left nothing. No children, no family, never married, no one to sit shiva, no one to say Kaddish, etc., etc. So I eulogized him in class. And that third call, I eulogized him at the OU. Now watch. I'm sitting in shul between Mincha and Maariv. I arranged with the OU to... I don't like the daven Maariv late. I like the daven Maariv while my head is clear and I can daven with kavanah. So I arranged with them to pick me up at Yad Tamar. I would be davening Mincha Maariv. I told them Maariv is the early minyan outside. Sure enough, right at the start of Maariv, there's a car, there's the guy, and they're picking me up right on time. Between Mincha Maariv, I was sitting minding my business learning Gemara, and I hear a professor, one of the professors who davens there, talking with another person, and they mention the name Professor Klausner. So I jump up, I say, are you talking about Professor Yosef Klausner? I'm about to interview his great nephew, to eulogize his great nephew. What are you talking about? They say, well, people put out books, and among the books are the classic work of Professor Yosef Klausner, The History of Bayit Sheni. So they say to me, do you want it? No one wants it. They know in Israel they put books out. You can build a whole library, walking weeks here. I collect books for my wife, for novels, etc. So it's beautiful. So I say, sure. So I go to eulogize, and you remember the story I told, I tell it there, that the poor Klaus feeds into Rabbi Parnas' class. Remember, you understood what I'm saying, who Teddy Parnas, Yehuda Parnas. And Rabbi Parnas is taking attendance, and he gets to the name Klaus, and Yosef Klaus, he says, I hope you're not related to that big uppy chorus, Professor Klausner. And the poor kid has to say, yeah, that's my great uncle. So I said, I showed the books. If anyone wants these two volumes, anyone is in the field. It's in Hebrew. It's Professor Klausner's Professor of Hebrew U. He doesn't, I tell you why they called him an uppy chorus. He's a tremendous amount of knowledge. The Klausners were geniuses. There was another uncle, Rabbi Yisrael Klausner, who wrote fabulous books, including one on the Vilna cemetery, where you cry when you read it, because after World War II, the communists plowed over the cemetery. They built the largest soccer field in Lithuania on top of where Gedolei Yisrael are buried. Two graves they could rebury in the new cemetery was Reb Chaim Moisen and the Vilna Gaon, but it hurts. But this Klausner, at times, he'll differ with Chazal. He'll go with the classic sources. Obviously, you'll see. But the volumes are very fascinating. He recreates Bayit Sheni, etc. So if anyone wants it, you're welcome to it. I went through it, Chol Hamoed. I looked, but it's not my field of specialty. Next. These are printouts of Ha'am Kovetz Torani, Am HaTorah. This was published by Agudat Yisrael in America. It's Choveret Ketvav from 1981. It has some interesting tshuvot in it, including tshuvot from Moshe Feinstein. So if anyone wants, one is printed out on one side of the page, one is printed out on two sides of the page. But whatever, Talmud consulted me and I answered and I gave more sources. So if anyone wants, you're welcome. This is the latest Jewish action. Wonderful issue. I have to give it to Rabbi Rubin. It deals with Geira. Do you get Jewish action?
No.
And this is in your ballpark. But I would suggest if anyone can get a hold of Jewish action, the OU, Gesundheit, it's a beautiful, beautiful issue, Jews by choice. This is what I referred to in yesterday's Shia. This I can't give away, I have only one copy, but I'll lend it.
Yeah.
Here's the interview with me in Ignite, with the Greiser Hund, the Ungarische Hund. It's a riot. But here I am, here's the guy interviewing me. It's being recorded. And
why don't you make some Xerox copies for the class?
I have to correct every paragraph. If anyone wants to borrow, you're welcome to borrow, but give it back to me ultimately.
I'm just gonna scan it.
Whatever you wish. This is a Chabad publication. If anyone has a soul, this gives you insight how a Talmud relates to a Rebbe. And the editor of this is a sub-student of mine. He surfaced when I was in Connecticut this past summer. I spoke in Stanford. He was there. And he's the editor of Der Herr. Der Herr. It means you should listen to teach you something. It's a very good concept. When you walk out of Shia, someone will say to you, was hat man der Herr in the Shia? In other words,
what did you hear?
What did you hear? What was the gist? Okay, the gist. This is Funny One with a Soul. This is about a YU graduate, Rabbi Henry Isaacs, how he wound up in the rabbinate. Very fascinating. The chaplaincy and the rabbinate. He was in Bangor, Maine. He lives in Jerusalem today. I know this story. I heard the story from him. Fabulous. This is in relation to my Shimon Rabbi Silva and the conservative movement. This is a YU Musmach writing about his great-grandfather, who was a YU Musmach, or grandfather, a YU Musmach, had a conservative shul, and the Balabatim complain about him to the rabbinic assembly that he doesn't allow the Balabatim to park in the shul parking lot on Shabbos. And you'll see what they answer. It's frightening. The gist of the answer is, get rid of the rabbi, get yourself a rabbi who will permit it. This is going back to my Sheyurim and Rav Hutna, a beautiful description of Rav Hutna in his most positive years and how he grabs Talmidim and how he loves a Talmud who's a wise guy, who's off the wall. And it's a fabulous, fabulous description. Annie Russ Friedman died at 97. These were the Russ daughters who had a Russian daughter's delicacy, Lower East Side temple of herring, lox, and other delicacies. A beautiful article, but not one word is geblieben Yiddish, nis geblieben Yiddish, there was any Yiddishkeit left in the family. This is about Germany, and this may be going on all through Europe. Jews are going right wing because of animosity towards the Muslims. So they're going with right-wingers who among them are tremendous anti-Semites. Very interesting. This is very sad. Rakepit will speak out. Frustration in White House grows over Jewish opposition to Trump. And the president has been quoted to me by people who know that he can't understand he's done so much for Israel, so much for the Jews, and yet they're going to vote Democratic. And I can explain it in one simple sentence. The state of Israel is an embarrassment for the New York Times. They would love to assimilate, have no one remind them they're Jews in the world. We are walking with strimals in Cincinnati. It is an embarrassment. And that's exactly what Trump doesn't understand. He should come study with Rakete.
That's why they don't, and Israeli, they don't want to, how many generals do you think they'll be with yarmulkes and tzitzis?
It's going to be unbelievable. This is someone died who made this as 90 years of age, Loritten Evans. She made the point, French filmmaker, it's exactly the point I make in Washington, I repeat so many times in class. Hitler killed 6 million, I don't know if people complain, they want to hear the comments. It killed 6 million and ruined the lives of another 5 million. These are the pictures that all over the world everyone's talking about. My wife's sister called my wife to tell her, did you see the pictures? Ivanka Trump at the White House taking lulav and etrog, and 10 other Jewish people there made a bracha on lulav. You see the pictures. Kol hakavod to Chabad. That's all I can say. Sheldon and Adelson, New York Times article. He loves the way Trump is working out. At times he was angry at him, but now he's very pleased, and wow, the more he's pleased, the better we are. Seth Farber, my Talmud graduate of the Kollel, independent but they did him, interesting article. Is he good or is he harming the rabbinate? Believe it or not, this is about someone that Chabad inspired, from Rolling Stones to rapping tefillin, Elliot Lasky. What the article doesn't tell you, that in the 1960s he studied at NYU with a guy named Aaron Rothkopf. Turning rascals into rabbis, that's the Rebbe at his best, where people say, should we throw a kid out of yeshiva? And he says, that's not the answer. The challenge to a Rebbe is to turn a rascal into a rabbi. This is the Rebbe and the professor. It's about, they contact the sixth Rebbe professor, Selo Wittemeyer Baron. You know who that is. Do you know who that is? There's Columbia U, the great Jewish historian, social history. He tried to contact the sixth Rebbe to get him into a think tank. It didn't succeed, but the correspondence is relevant. This is by Wertheimer from the seminary on Judaism's trying to stay relevant. It's sad because without Torah mitzvah, you can get nowhere. This is the Rebbe, his involvement in the Sefer Kvodat Bat Melech. It's a Chabad Sefer on Dinei Ishud, of woman, Dinei Isha. And the book has now been reprinted, and it tells the story of the previous Rebbe, the seventh Rebbe, I should say, how he got involved and helped bring the book to fruition. This is very interesting. It's someone I knew very well, Hadassah Schneerson Kalbach. She was married to Reb Shlomo's twin brother. He, Eliachayim, he rabbinated a 5-minute drive from where I rabbinate. He was in Hillside, I was in Maplewood. We were very good friends. This is an interview with her today, well in her 90s, where she speaks about her husband. That's Rebellia. And she speaks about Reb Shlomo. Very fascinating. And finally, this is for people who are in the money world. The New York Times, you've seen this in the news, it was big news here. The New York Times did investigative reporting, what a thief, how many pages, 36 pages on Trump. A Talmud, Steve Gross, I thank you, gave it to me, said, Rebbe, you should read it. I read it, I never enjoyed anything more, and I reached one simple conclusion. The New York Times should be fined, should be put in jail for being liars, for being the public. My dear students, is there anyone in the world who doesn't know that rich people have many legal schemes to minimize taxes? So they do 36 pictures. That is Mr. Fred Trump. Wake up, Yomo. Yomo, give him a shot. This is the man who built the first shul you saw in the United States. And they interview endless lawyers, accountants, IRS people. Everything they did was lawyer, accountant, IRS. Well, if they misjudged, they should all be in jail. But what do you want out of Trump? He did what every other wealthy man does, the father. And the son was only a small partner in it. But wow, and the New York Times and the Israeli radio picks up thieves, robbers. Until we meet again Sunday, Monday next week, I wouldn't miss it for anything. And you do something else too. It's not just your gain. I hope you're gaining knowledge, but it's a chesed. You come, take a look. I'm the oldest person in this room. I now am the youngest person in the room. You are dead tired. The 2 hours sheer. And I am rolling. So look at the chesed you do, that you take an old guy and you turn him into a youngster. Until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vidanya.
Oh, poetized that well.
From the Rav.
No kidding. Up in the road. Do you want to go on your face over here?